south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. So, lately with Nicaragua all over the news, concerning the canal, of course, I've been speaking to people from Nicaragua that I know. Common people, you know, middle-class people making anywhere from 200 to maybe 500 bucks a month. You know what? When I ask them what their desires are, what they really want, they don't want the canal. Their wants and needs are much, much simpler. Clean water and better toilets. I'm not kidding. And the ones that have any foresight at all think that the canal is eventually going to turn their country into a Costa Rica. And believe me, Nicaraguans don't much like Costa Rica. They've got a border with Costa Rica, so they see all too well what can happen when development comes too fast. Foreigners will flood in and they'll get rich, and the common people will lose out. Just like Costa Rica, prices will go up, and there'll be more, not less, air, water, and environmental pollution, not to mention more taxes and bigger, more corrupt, cronyistic government. That said, those same Nicaraguans would secretly love to work for government since they pay twice as much as the same kind of job in the private sector. So then, everyone's a hypocrite, right? So anyway, just to give you a take on what the common people are thinking. However, it's much different if you talk to anyone from Nicaragua who's from the government or who has a business of any kind that's on the books. That means paying taxes and registered. They'll tell you the canal is the best thing that ever happened in Nicaragua. Just like 30 years ago, the people in northern Japan said the best thing that ever happened there was the building of Fukushima. So then you might ask, who's right? As far as I can see, none of them. In fact, it's almost a sure bet that canal's never going to get built. Now, expat Eddie, who's been scouting out Nicaragua lately, figuring if the canal goes through, there would be a lot of places along the route to stick a few of his little sushi restaurants. Anyway, when he came back from that tour just recently, stopping along the way in Costa Rica, boy, does he have stories to tell about Costa Rica. He said he stopped at a few clandestine casinos. You know, they have those all over Latin America. And, of course, a lot of legit casinos, too. You see them in some of the very big hotels. And the difference is, the legit casinos have big lights and signs all over the place and people handing out flyers. Whereas the clandestine backdoor casinos, they're obscure places you hear about by word of mouth. Usually located in someone's spacious apartment or nice house. Though they're not scruffy and dangerous like you might think. They don't want to scam you or scare you. They want you to come back and drop more dough. And of course, the reason why so many people prefer those backdoor casinos is because they give better odds. They can do that because they're off the books, pay no taxes, and have little overhead. And by the way, those backdoor so-called non-legit casinos are almost always run by Asians. Anyway, Eddie said he recently made the rounds at the casinos in Nicaragua and Costa Rica. And guess what? They're all giving anywhere from 3-1 to 10-1 odds that canal will never get built. That is actually finished and with real traffic going through. Now, they all say it'll get built to some degree, but it'll never get finished. So if you're a betting man or woman and really believe the positive pressure hearing about that canal, how'd you like to get 5 or 10-1 odds on that? Remember, the smart money at the gambling casinos and elsewhere say it's never going to get done. So Eddie, hearing all that, is naturally off the idea of setting up any restaurants in Nicaragua. Not based on anybody's positive ideas about the canal, anyway. And speaking of Eddie, let me tell you what happened to him in Costa Rica. Now, except for airport layovers in San Jose, Eddie hasn't been wandering around Costa Rica, not boots on the ground anyway, for about 5 or 6 years. And because Eddie's no dummy, it should be no surprise to you he's got no restaurants in Costa Rica. He says, way too many gringos, which means too much gringo competition, which usually means the slow kiss of death for anybody in the hospitality, bar, restaurant, or mom-and-pop hotel business. Exactly the kind of enterprises so many fresh green gringos want to put their money in. Like Eddie says, the only competition he wants is Latin competition. In fact, he welcomes it. Since gringo organization and attention to detail blows Latin business competition out of the water. So anyway, Eddie hadn't had boots on the ground in Costa Rica for 5 years or so, and he decided to visit his old friend Jack, who owned the Beetle Bar in downtown San Jose. That's Beetle Bar as in the Beatles, a theme bar. In fact, 20-something years ago when I was in Costa Rica, it was practically the only expat bar downtown San Jose. So anyway, Eddie went to San Jose and was walking around by the Central Park looking for the Beetle Bar, and it wasn't there anymore. So by hook and crook, he found out it got moved to Jaco Beach, one of the surfer beaches in Costa Rica. And since Eddie had a couple of meetings and he was stuck in Costa Rica for a few days, he headed down to Jaco, that's J-A-C-O, and sure enough, he found the Beetle Bar. Of course, it was kind of run down and decrepit, with the requisite tourist drunks, surfers, washed-out hippies, and hookers that you see all over Costa Rica, basically. Anyway, it was seedy and it hit the skids, totally unlike the way the Beetle Bar was when it was located up in San Jose, the capital. Jack, the Canadian owner, had always kept the place in San Jose up to sort of first-world standards. Back then, it was a gringo expat hanging place, and he never let the blatant hooker crowd from the bars and clubs and hotels around the neighborhood sit around, scout the place out, or just take up space. Now, here's what Eddie found out, and let it be a lesson to anyone who's thinking of opening up a bar or restaurant on or near the gringo tourist trail. And that goes for anywhere in Latin America. It turns out some years ago when Jack set up this new bar on Jaco Beach, it became the center of the Jaco nightlife. It became a huge gringo pickup joint. And not for just gringo guys, either. The gringa girls on vacation would come, too. It was just the local spot to be. But mainly, the local Costa Rican girls would come from miles around to hustle fresh tourist gringos out of drinks, dinner, and real and pretend love connections. Anyway, the place was so hot with the tourists, the owner Jack did exactly the right thing at the right time. Which, believe me, few gringos ever do when they're making money hand over fist. Somehow they believe it's going to last forever. Anyway, he sold it at its peak to a group of undisclosed gringo investors who immediately decided to milk the place by instituting an unheard of cover charge. First, $4. Then, a few months later, $6 at the door, then 10, then $12 just to get in. So then came the competition. The gringo competition, the stuff you don't want. A new hotel called the Hotel Cocal opened up right nearby, and suddenly the patrons were gone. And Jack's investors defaulted on their contract, and Jack took the property back. And you know, Eddie said that was Jack's first big mistake. If you're going to sell a bar, especially to a group of people who are investors, they should be able to come up with at least 50% of the cash. And Eddie says you never give them more than a year to pay off the remainder. Because so many bars and restaurants lose momentum after a year under new management. Even if when you turn it over to them, it's going gangbusters. So anyway, they went bust and Jack got screwed. He's got it back again and he's trying to build it back up. Very difficult now that he's got that new gringo competition. Anyway, Eddie said he walked in one day about 2 p.m, sat next to the bar. And there was maybe 10, 15 people in the place. And about 2 stools down sat 2 beautiful young Costa Rican girls and a 40-ish, kinda scruffy-looking gringo who was in real need of a shave and a haircut, not to mention a little soap and water. He, obviously, footing the bar bill. This guy blabbering away in English as these 2 girls sucked down their expensive umbrella drinks. Then, as all gringo tourists usually do, the guy looked at Eddie and said, "Hey, where you from, dude?" God, I hate that word. And Eddie, always being cautious about saying anything personal to strangers, he said, "Texas by way of Oklahoma." And the guy said, "Yeah, I lived in Texas for a while. How long you here for, sport?" And Eddie said, "1 day's all. Just passing through. I gotta be in Managua, Nicaragua tomorrow." Then the guy said, "Well, come on over. I'll buy you a drink." So that's how gringos bond in expat bars and become best of friends in about 3 minutes. So for the next hour or so, they talked, and the guy bought the 2 girls more and more umbrella drinks. Then finally, as girls do, they slunk off to the bathroom as a pair. And then, maybe 5 minutes later, the guy's cell phone rang. He answered it, covered the mouthpiece, turned to Eddie and whispered, "Oops, it's the wife. I'll be right back." And he headed out the front door. Then, after another 10 minutes went by, the bartender walked over. A new bartender, a different one, a female. Anyway, she handed Eddie the bill. It was $86. Then Eddie looked at the bill and he said, no, mine's $12. The rest is theirs. With that, the bartender said, they're gone. And somebody's got to pay for this. Now, Eddie's a calm guy, so he doesn't get mad when things like that happen. He just said, nice and calmly, can we talk to Jack about this? She said, Jack, he's not around. He won't be back for 4 or 5 days. So Eddie got to see the new relocated Beetle Bar, but never got to see his old buddy, the owner, Canadian Jack. Then Eddie said, I don't even know those people. If they're regulars, they'll be back. They are regulars, aren't they? Then he said the woman bartender cracked a crooked smile and said, how long are you here for? And he said, well, I got to get out of here. I'm going to Managua tomorrow. Then she said, did you by any chance tell them that? He said, yeah, I guess. Small talk, you know? Then she gave him that, buddy, you just been scammed look. In fact, she said, I'm surprised a gringo was in on it. Then again, maybe he wasn't. Who knows? People run all kinds of scams. This is Costa Rica, you know. Every new flock of gringos brings a new scam. She said, I watch the local girls do it all the time. They sit around in here and any other of the bars on the strip. They have some nachos and nurse one drink. Then, somewhere around midday, the buses start coming into town with the newly landed gringos. And they pick on the ones that are here for short stays. Like you. You're going to Managua tomorrow? Perfect. Then the lady bartender said, I bet you they asked if they could use your phone, right? Then Eddie said, yeah, well, one of them said her battery was dead and needed to make a call. Could she borrow mine? With that, the bartender laughed and said, yeah, that's a famous Costa Rican lady bar trick, too. You know what they do? They use your phone to call one of their girlfriends or their own phone. Now they have your number. Caller ID, you know. So she said, don't be surprised if you get a phone call tonight from one of those girls apologizing for having to leave and wanting to meet you on the strip somewhere, and you'll end up getting scammed again. Or worse. Yeah, I'll bet you get a phone call tonight, all right, and you'll probably get invited to a party. So then you might ask, why wasn't Eddie smart enough to see all this? Well, that's because he's been living off the gringo tourist trail for 12, 13, 14 years now. And off the gringo trail, you just don't see that kind of stuff happening. Like Eddie says, the girls are 1,000% more humble and discreet and even timid. That is, unless you make it a point of hanging around the bars and discos, then you're bound to run into the tainted type, the party girls. Oh, and by the way, Eddie said, in that 6 or 7 years since he's been to Costa Rica, it's gotten much worse and in so many ways. He says, for one thing, everywhere there are a lot more scruffy, dirtbag, greasy, kind of smelly gringos who kind of went native, the kind you meet at a bar or a beach or even at a park, that are just a little bit too anxious to be your friend. They want something, they want you to buy them a drink, or they want your money, or they want you to invest in some stupid scheme, or, more often than not, he says they just want to bum a cigarette from you. In fact, he said last time he was there 6 or 7 years ago, in one day, he remembers getting hit up for cigarettes 4 different times from scruffy gringos. Yes, that's right. Eddie's an on and off smoker. Anyway, he's long since learned his lesson, and now he employs a neat little trick. He almost never carries a pack of cigarettes on him, but only one cigarette in his front pocket. He said, no cigarette smoker, no matter how desperate, would ever bum what they think is your last smoke. I wouldn't know. I'm not a smoker, and I don't know smoker's etiquette. In fact, I didn't even know there was smoker's etiquette for the down-and-out street gringo. Anyway, not till Eddie filled me in on it. Oh, and by the way, as far as the original Beetle Bar that used to be in San Jose so many years ago, I may have mentioned in a show a long time ago, one of my first shows, I guess, that Canadian Jack got tricked into buying the place as partners with a Costa Rican woman when he arrived many years ago and didn't know a lick of Spanish. She sat him down with a lawyer, and they both told him it was the law that he needed to have a Costa Rican partner or couldn't have a business. A total lie. So Jack got the Costa Rican knife in the back some 30 years ago. Just imagine how sophisticated the scams are now. That said, I mentioned the fact that when you're off the gringo tourist trail, the girls and the guys are really much more friendly, sincere, likable, and even humble. Unless, of course, you're the partying, disco, clubbing type, then you're going to meet the wrong kind of people, I can guarantee you that. That said, you might remember I mentioned in the past I was the host of many Latin American radio shows in English. Anyway, my show format was usually like this. I'd have 2 hours a day doing the morning and sometimes evening drive-by shows in those big Latin markets. just taking phone calls and playing songs, etc. You know, like in the States, the usual shock jock stuff, only down here, Latins just do not get American humor, but that never stopped them from listening. Why? Because it was considered oh so cool, stylish, and fashionable to listen to gringo radio. Now, I only played one or two songs an hour, the rest was all fun and games. I'll never forget, one time I asked the audience this question. I said, call me right now. I'd like you to tell me, what's one of the things in your past that you're most ashamed of? Call me now, no names please. And I asked that question one day for ladies, and I asked that question one day for guys. And remember now, since these were big markets way off the gringo tourist trail, my callers were almost all upper middle class and upper class Latins who spoke pretty good but not great English. And, of course, I had all the US, Canadian, British, Australian, New Zealand embassy and military people listening too because, well, I was first world gringo radio for them. Now, in talking about the people that would call into the show, I'd say half my callers were wealthy people or children of the wealthy, and the other half a much more interesting and diverse group. These were Latins who had money, but grew up poor or with very little, coming from the lower middle class or middle classes, then later becoming self-made business people. And it was these folks by far that had the most interesting things to say. For example, when I asked ladies to call in and tell me their moment of shame, I remember these three stories specifically. One lady called in and she said when she and her girlfriend were around 9 or 10 years old, they were addicted to this soap opera coming out of Mexico. And, as usual, the female protagonists in the soap opera were blonde and light-skinned, the kind of lily-white gringo look that you just don't see down here in Latin America, except in the soap operas. Anyway, she said her and her girlfriend wanted to be like the heroines in this soap opera so badly that they took a scouring pad and some chlorine bleach and they tried to scrub their own skin, starting with their faces, their cheeks, to change their own natural brown coffee-colored skin to lily white. Kind of pull a Latin Michael Jackson. She said it seemed to be working. They scrubbed for a while until the skin got red and raw and really started hurting. And now, she said, at the age of 28 when she called in, she still has a little spot on her cheek about the size of a quarter that's not nearly the same texture or smoothness of the rest of her skin. So she says every time she wakes up in the morning and goes to the mirror and puts on her makeup, she's reminded how much of a dummy she was way back when. Then, she said, there's a moral to that story, of course. Anyone with a half a brain could figure out. And speaking of personal, shameful moments, I had another phone call from a Latin lady who said when growing up, she lived in a lower middle class, kind of poor neighborhood. No car, no hot water, no washing machine, so they all washed their clothes by hand in the outdoor basin known as a pila. Anyway, she said there were four kids in her family. And she said the only time her and her brothers and sisters got new clothes was right before the new school year, when the kids would go down with their parents to one of the big department stores and she'd get a skirt, two blouses, a pair of slacks, and some new shoes. And she said at Christmas, that's when you'd get your underwear and your socks. Anyway, she said the people next door who had an adjoining fence only had one kid, and they were in the same boat, they were lower middle class. However, the parents routinely bought new clothes for that one kid because, well, they only had one girl. So, the caller said, because she only had one skirt and one blouse, etc., she had to wash her clothes every day when she came back from school. Every day. And the rest of the kids did, too. So, every day as she washed her clothes, she'd look over the fence with envy and see the extended wardrobe of the little girl next door. Three or four pairs of pants, three or four skirts, etc. Hanging on the clothesline. Now, the little girl next door was very proud of the fact that she had more clothes than most kids in the neighborhood, and she let them know it. She strutted her stuff. So one day, the caller said, when no one was looking, she was out washing her own clothes, and she tossed some chlorine bleach over the fence, and within a couple hours, that little girl's wardrobe was trashed. And she said the next day, the mother took the crying little girl around the neighborhood knocking on doors, asking who did such a thing. And all the neighborhood people, when face to face with the crying child and mother, they were duly outraged, at least on the surface. But inside, most had a good case of Schadenfreude. It's a German word meaning secretly rejoicing in another person's misfortune. So then, you might wonder, did the guilty party fess up? Nope. She too appeared to be duly outraged and lives the lie to this day. And when I asked her why she didn't admit it, even though she was 30-something when she called me about it, she said because some years back, the girl got married and had a kid and asked her to be the godmother. And of course, she said yes, you don't turn a thing like that down. Oh, the little secrets we keep, huh? And now for what I think is the saddest story of all. This caller said she too grew up in a poor, lower-middle-class neighborhood. Her dad had abandoned the family and she lived with her ma and three kids. And when she was about 14 years old, the next door neighbor lady knocked on her door and gave her a little proposition. She said that she was worried about her young daughter going to school and would like to pay her, the next door neighbor, $1 a day to get on the bus every morning and take her little 8-year-old daughter to a school that was some miles away to make sure the little girl got off at the right place and got into the school safely. And then ride the bus back to that school at 2 in the afternoon, pick her up and bring her home safely. Naturally, she didn't want her little 8-year-old daughter on a public bus alone. So our caller made a deal with the neighbor lady to do this. Every day, the neighbor lady would give her bus fare and $1, and she'd take her little daughter on the bus and drop her off at the school and pick her up in the afternoon, as planned. Kind of. Now, here's the unmentionable part. Every day, when she'd take this little girl on the bus going to school, she'd grab the little girl's lunch bag, undo her sandwich, take out the meat, and eat it. The little girl always had meat in her sandwich, as opposed to the caller, who said she only had meat at her house maybe once a week. Now, she did this for an entire school year. So naturally, I asked her, didn't the little girl tell her mom on you? She said, no, because I told her if she ever mentioned it to her mom or dad or anyone, I'd take her in the bus to the next town over and drop her off at the market where they steal little girls and they're never heard from again. Man, this girl was evil, huh? Anyway, she said that lasted a year. For the next school term, the little girl switched to a much closer school, only about 6 blocks away, and her mother would walk her there every day. Then, of course, I asked the caller, what happened? Did she stay in contact with that family or that little girl? And the caller said, yes, I lived there about 3 or 4 more years and met a guy and we got married, moved away. But some 5 years later, she bumped into the little girl again. Now, the little girl was around 18 or 20 years old. And the caller said she just didn't know what to say to the girl. She tried to apologize, but she just couldn't. Then the little girl said, you know, it's because of you I can never eat a sandwich with mayonnaise or lettuce or tomatoes on it again. Because, she said, for that year when you took the meat out of my sandwiches, by lunchtime all I had was soggy bread from the mayonnaise, wilted lettuce, and, the tomato. After that, I just swore off of that stuff. So those were just some of the stories that Latin ladies would tell me. Wow, some very tough comments on Latin society, don't you think? Now, don't worry, I will make some space in a future show to tell you some shameful stories that male Latin listeners have called in about. That said, let's change gears a bit. You know, I always talk about how there are so many business niches to fill down here in Latin America. You only got to come down, get your boots on the ground, and find one, or two, or ten. And believe me, some gringos come down here and really make it big on ideas that you would just laugh at up in the States. For example, here's a brand new gringo idea that just might blow your mind a little. Now, I know up in the States a lot of people are into racing and stock cars and all that. Well, you know, in a small way, they've got that stuff down here, too. Every big and medium-sized city has a racing car track or two or three on the outskirts of the city. Yes, they have legitimate car and motorcycle races every week. So it's a hobby of the rich, yet the average public comes out in droves to see it because they only have to pay about $2 or $3 to get in. It's a cheap afternoon at the races. So then what's that got to do with gringos in business? Well, get a load of this. Just recently, I've noticed full-page ads in big city Latin newspapers announcing that on race day at whatever particular racetrack, you, a member of the public, can participate in a once-in-a-lifetime thrill. For a mere $150, you could take 10 laps around the track by yourself in a Ferrari 458 or a Lamborghini Gallardo. Now, I'm sure you're thinking, $150, wow. What average Latin American could ever come up with that dough? Well, get this. They let you put it on a credit card, or they'll work out a 10-month payment plan at $20 a month. So, if you don't have a credit card, if you can come up with $25 cash, They'll do your credit workup right there and qualify you. So yes, folks, the Gringo Advantage strikes again. Who would have ever thought of that? Don't get me wrong, I don't think this is an original idea. I think they're just copying somebody up in the States. What I'm saying is it took one smart gringo to pull it off down here in Latin America. Now get this, last Sunday, I saw a bright yellow Ferrari 458 parked on a trailer in front of an Audi dealership next to a big sign that said, Manejarme, which means drive me in Spanish. And of course, this was that Ferrari 458 they were talking about that you could drive for $150. So I asked the guy sitting alongside the trailer, how many people pony up $150 and actually drive that car on any given day? He says usually they get about a minimum of 20 people a day, sometimes up to 50. And he said there are over 500 tracks in Latin America, and they stay sometimes a couple of weekends at a time at each one. Actually, he said they've only been to about 20 tracks so far. So there's two guys, one gringo, one Latin, and they're pulling in $3,000 to $7,000 a day, a couple of weekends a month. So then what about the Ferrari and the Lamborghini? Well, guess what? They're not new models. They're older, not really worn out or tattered, but you can tell they show their age. Then I said, it looks like a great business, but you're paying for full-page ads. That's got to cost a ton. He said, nope. The credit card companies, the Autodrome, the banks, the local TV stations, they all want to be our sponsors, and they generally do all the advertising. With this idea, we really bring in the crowds. Then the gringo said this. You know what H.L. Mencken said in 1924? No one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the common people. And if you think that's a little harsh, remember, nearly everyone who drives that Ferrari puts it on the 10-month payment plan. So that means for the next 10 months, you're paying off that 10-minute ride 1 minute at a time. And if you think the owners are taking a big risk that someone might crack up the car, well, one of the partners told me that everyone's gun-shy and they drive way too slow. Just the sound and the rumble of 450 horsepower scares the hell out of people. All right, before we finish, I'd like to remind you that I'm going to have another Expat Wisdom Boots on the Ground seminar in Latin America in July 2015. So if you're interested in coming down with me and a small select group of like-minded people, email me at theexpatfiles@gmail.com or johnny@expatwisdom.com. I'll put you on the list and let you know about the early bird specials.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.